talking about the relationship between the science people and the librarian.
Yes, when I went to Washington to pick up these lists of subject heading terms and in 1951, I went to the Department of Agriculture Library because Ralph Shaw was the librarian and he was experimenting with the rapid selector. But otherwise, I went to places like the librarian at NIH, and he, Scott Adams, was fairly traditional at the time. I went to the Bureau of Standards where Wildhack, the physicist, was experimenting with the Uniterm system and peekaboo cards. I went to the Navy Library, Ruth Hooker, and to the Library of Congress, but the Navy Research Section, which was headed by Dwight Gray at the time, and which eventually was folded into Astia, so that they were, and I went to the Chemical Biological Coordination Center, and I went to New York, and this, all of this was to collect lists of subject headings or classification schedules or something that would give us terminology that was actually being used by people who were indexing or classifying or categorizing scientific and technical information documents.
Now, all this was initiated by this thinking about how
thinking
to describe
about,
things.
Yes. Then I spent, I have to tell you, I spent a couple of weeks at the Welch Medical Library with Sanford Locke and Gene Garfield. A week, I think, I was down in Washington 2 weeks, and I went around Washington with Lee Boner. And she was the one who introduced me to Ralph Shaw. Otherwise, I spent some time with chemists, like the Chemical Biological Coordination Center and the Patent Office.
Now, this is your report that you prepared?
Yes. I don't know what to do with it. You say, you know, what are you going to do with your papers?
Keep it in your papers.
I look at it and I think, who cares? You know, and I've lost Appendix B, which was the list that people, a list of the list that people actually handed us. And I suppose that what happened when I went back was that I took that off for some other use, you know, but it was a list of subject headings used in the Navy Research Section, you know, categories, a different list, and we put them all together when we got back to MIT and came up with our dictionary that we were going to use to analyze terms.
Okay? Well, this is all initial thinking about semantic factoring.
And what we wanted to do was to analyze terms that people were actually using rather than than to do anything with Webster or just to make up our own terms.
The purpose was thinking about the semantic factoring idea specifically, or was that still a term that had not yet come to be developed by
you? I'm not really sure when we started to use the term semantic factoring. I would have to do some research through our papers, and my problem is that I deposited all of my publications in a manual, and I can't, you know, pull things off the shelf here. But we certainly were talking semantic factoring in the 50s. There was an article, and let me get that. There was an article in Chem Engineering News, and wasn't it the one where Pete Loon showed his Loon scanner that we use, that the term semantic factoring was quoted?
I don't remember if that was in that article or not, but I'll go back and double check it.
Yes, and also there was an article in Chem Engineer, I believe it was Chem Engineering News, definition and systematization. We called it, and this was out of American documentation, and it was based on a paper that Alan and I presented before the symposium at MIT, and that's the one in 1952, and that's the one when preliminary analysis of terms.
Well, I'll go back and look at that and
yes,
see if we can...
Yes, this is a good sentence. The need to analyze terminology for our purpose arises from the fact that practical searching machines based on modern electronic techniques are able to identify sequences of symbols but are not able to interpret the meanings
mm-hmm.
of words. And
mm-hmm.
we said that we wanted to make the meanings explicit
mm-hmm.
so that
mm-hmm.
yeah, and then, and so this is a good one.
Okay, now this is the American documentation.
Yes,
yeah,
and
right. That's in number five.
This
okay.
is number five, and they were all compiled and a couple of more added. There were 10 papers in American documentation, and they were bound up in the what was it called? Machine Literature Searching,
oh, right.
I think.
Yeah, and I have a copy of all of them.
Okay, yeah. But what I was thinking, if you can bear with me again, is that there was Mechanized System. This is the one out of Chem Engineering News
mm-hmm.
for... But there was another paper that I shouldn't be so. This is, you know, I often say new tools for the resurrection of knowledge. Now that was Chem Engineering News for 54, and there are the three of us at.
Right, I read that.
Yeah,
yeah.
At Battelle.
Right.
And that's ACS gave the initial grant to Perry, so that's
right.
a lot. That's just the figures you have
right.
from the
right.
yeah the punch card committee and all.
Well, let's and go before we go to Battelle. Let's go back to your impressions about librarians versus
okay.
the science people, particularly the science documentation people. You described them, the librarians, as traditional, even the special librarians as traditional. And what do you mean by that exactly?
Without trying to be to denigrate or be pejorative or anything, the librarians traditionally were concerned with classifying or categorizing books or documents, and the information specialists were trying to get at the information contained in the documents. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the cataloging of books and the indexing of the contents of either books or particularly the technical reports that were burgeoning in the federal sector, the were two different processes, okay? The reason that a lot of chemists and information chemists, information specialists, who could or could not be the special librarians, okay? One of the reasons that they got involved in the indexing was that the company reports were not being used to advantage in the company's research efforts.
Because they were not in the libraries, or the librarians didn't want to have anything to do with it?
Or if they were, they could have been filed in the library, but you couldn't get at the information in them unless you knew the title or the author, you know, or a date or something like that.
Or, you know, they, if they had done subject analysis, they would have used Library of Congress subject editing?
Yes. And they would have done, you know, this report is about subject A, but they didn't get into the chemist, you know, the chemicals that were used and the reactions that were described, or the equipment that was described, or something like that.
There was a phrase bandied about in the early 50s that by the special librarians, that documentation was special library work done by amateurs.
Yes.
Do you remember that phrase?
I agree that that was certainly an attitude on the part of both sides. The SciTech information types, the STINFO types in the federal government, had no training in library techniques or processes, okay? And so they reinvented wheels. And Lee Bonnet was a good observer of this kind of activity. She gave a paper at an ADI meeting in Lehigh, 1952 or something like that. The title of her paper was "Lay That Pyramid Down," and her message was, if you take a classification scheme and turn it sideways, you've got unit terms or documentation headings that are not structured. You know, they're all of a she was trying to tell us over the years that there is more similarity between the two camps than differences if we would only learn to talk each other's languages.
Well, what? Let me try this assessment on you. Seems to me the librarians generally, including the special librarians, lack the subject knowledge.
Yes.
Is that generally the case?
Generally, even the special librarians generally lack the subject knowledge or the appreciation of the need to get at the details, as opposed to the physical embodiment, okay? Let me digress time-wise to a more recent case. I worked with, there was in the federal sector, and it was in the 1960s that I think that I, late 60s, maybe even 70s, that I worked in, with COSATI, the Committee on Scientific and Technical Information. COSATI did some very interesting work on standards. They developed a standard report format. They developed a standard documentation page to be included in the back of federal reports that was almost a version of Perry's telegraphic abstracts, you know. They did a standard format for recording the indexing, identification and indexing of federal reports based on the ANSI standard format for information interchange. At the same time, the library community, headed by the Library of Congress, was developing a standard format for the cataloging of books based on the ASCII, American Standard, format for information interchange.
Right.
And Henriette Avram and I used to have a go at it every once in a while. She wanted to know, why don't you people use MARC? And I said, because the purpose of MARC is different from the purpose of the Cassati standard, which is for indexing technical, you know, the content of technical reports. MARC has subject headings, but they are, you know, standard subject headings, more general. And MARC has to be concerned about the accuracy of the heading for author, for example. The Cassati report people, some of them got all wound up in that kind of thing. We have to be sure that this, that you know, Madeline M. Berry is Madeline M. Berry every time, and not just Madeline Berry or Madeline Berry Henderson or something. We have to be, and I used to argue with them along the lines of, the author is in a technical report, a federal contractor's report to the federal government, mm-hmm. for example, or a federal agency report. The author is just one of the clues that we use. The place where the work was done, the contract number, the sponsoring agency, the headings that were assigned to the report by the authors when they did this documentation mm-hmm. sheet, they taken together can lead us to the report. And it doesn't matter whether it's Madeline M. Henderson or Madeline Berry Henderson or, you know, because we'll get it. Now, I can remember an answer by one of the catalogers at NTIS. There are two mathematicians at Harvard, both named, now the name escapes me. Mm-hmm. And you don't want the father's work if you want the son's work. And I said, I wouldn't base a whole system on that unusual circumstance, you know?
Mm-hmm. What was Mrs. Abrams' responses to
her? She didn't believe it. You know, she believed that my feeling was that there were two parallel standards, one for the cataloging community and one for the indexing community. And they could be, since they were both based on the standard format for information interchange, they could be consulted.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have to they didn't have to be one. And I never convinced her, and she never convinced me, you know. I just felt that, and, you know, I did a book review a few years back of the standard, I think it was cataloging guidelines, and I did one for information processing and management, and one for the government publications review. Corporate author authority list, okay? 40,000 verified main entries for documents cataloged by the National Technical Information Exchange. And I did it for government publications review, and I said that it was important for anybody who did cataloging or indexing of technical reports to have that standard. The Anglo-American cataloging rules form of the entry, when known, is included. So you could go back and forth. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A man named Tim Dempsey wrote a letter to the editor saying that it was too bad that that there was this second standard, and he one standard is enough, huh? And he said that that the corporate author authority list will be useful only for a neglected group. And I wrote a letter to the editor saying that I was sorry to read that, because I think that the AACR2 rules expressed in the MARC format using the Library of Congress name authority files are recognized standards followed by many librarians, and he said that they were in various departments on the UNC campus. But Cossati descriptive cataloging guidelines expressed in the Cossati format are also followed by many librarians and information specialists in processing technical reports. I had arguments with the people at GPO.
Yeah.
You know,
who
have more technical reports than anything else, but try to force them into the AACR2 cataloging guidelines, and in my estimation, spent too much time and effort standardizing things that weren't, that didn't need standardizing, you know?
Well, back again.
The corporate authority list, I think, was important, because to be able to say National Bureau of Standards, Institute for Computer Sciences, Computer Information Division, and not wondering how do I get to that group down there that I know exists, you know? I thought those were just as useful as the AACR2. Is that cataloging guidelines,
right,
for names and so forth?
Yeah.
Yes.
Again, now back to the 50s.
But at that time, in the 50s, there were all these amateurs coming into the being pressed into service in the federal agencies to produce technical reports and make them available both within the agency and outside the agency, and the Cossati panels were trying to standardize both the look of the reports and the content and the way that the content could be used.
What's, in your view, was any satisfactory arrangement ever made between these two camps? In relation to that, of course.
I don't see it yet, and I've been out of the picture now for about 10 years since I stopped consulting with the technical reports processing agencies.
Right.
And it's the CENDI group. Commerce, represented by NTIS, energy, represented by the people down in Oak Ridge, NASA, out in the NASA STINFO activity out in Maryland, and defense, the Defense Technical Information Agency. They have a structure now, this CENDI group that meets regularly and talks about common problems and so forth. But when I was consulting with them and coming up with cataloging guidelines, the data element dictionary, and saying to them, you've got so many common data elements, you should you should call them the same thing and use them the same way. And I even said to them, you should take a page from the library community's book and do cooperative cataloging. Whoever produces a report catalogs it into the database, like OCLC was, and the agency that wants that report for their community looks at it and says, okay, but I want to add something else, you know, or I don't need these. So they take that record intact or supplemented into their files, you know, cooperative cataloging like OCLC. I can remember, I was a member of the Task Force on Automation of the Federal Library Committee, and I can remember Russell Shank, librarian at Smithsonian, telling me that he wanted to get Smithsonian into OCLC. And I said, before you do that unilaterally, let's try and get the community into, and there could be a federal library node on them. And we talked to librarians who said, it won't do us any good. Our collection is unique. And we said, well, let's try it anyway. Let's have a little experiment. And I can remember Mary Huffer was the librarian at the Department of the Interior. And she was one of the ones who said, nobody, you know, my collection is unique. And the first time that they put up a, they put an OCLC connection, I think, into Washington, and the librarians cataloged and looked at the cataloging records of the Fed, and they were astounded by how much similarity or duplication, if you will, they were enjoying. They did. Nobody was saying you shouldn't have these books or reports or whatever, but why catalog them twice? And there's a very, I believe, a very successful federal library cooperative cataloging operation.
Why wasn't NTIS the solution early on to this problem? Because they were the center for all of the reports coming in.
All of the reports coming in, and when they came, NTIS would get tapes from the other agencies, and they would combine them, I think, and yet when they got reports in, they'd catalog them again. And there is a mindset on the part of all camps, you know.
The not invented here syndrome.
The not invented here syndrome. Only I know what's necessary. Another small example. When Perry and I, and Alan Kent, when Perry, Barry, and Kent had a contract with the Army at Aberdeen Proving Ground, the Development and Proof Services, we initiated telegraphic style abstracts to be attached to each report that was sent into the library, and the ordnance material under test, the kind of test, the equipment used, the I don't know whether we call them important terms or what, were recorded on these forms. You can find that article about telegraphic abstracts in the American Documentation Series. We said to the librarians, none of whom at Aberdeen Proving Ground Development and Proof Services Library were librarians. They were records clerks and women who had come to work at the Proving Ground and gotten into the library as a good place for women to work.
Yeah, yeah. excuse me, I will. St-